Well, Nancy, I think it's a safe bet that next to actually cooking and eating, the thing we like best is reading about cooking and eating. And I wanted to see if today we might share some of our favorite writers on food.
Let's do that.
Well, my favorite has got to be A.J. Liebling, longtime writer for The New Yorker. He wrote about lots of stuff, boxing. He was a war correspondent. He wrote about Manhattan lowlife. And he said, I can write better than anybody who can write faster, and I can write faster than anybody who can write better. Here's a little excerpt from his Between Meals, An Appetite for Paris, describing prodigious Homeric meals in Paris between the wars. I've known some of the survivors, octogenarians of unblemished appetite and unfailing good humor, spry, wry, and free of the ulcers that come from worrying about a balanced diet. But they've had no emulators in France since the doctors there discovered the existence of the human liver. In the restaurant on the Rue Saint-Augustin, Monsieur Morand would dazzle his juniors, French and American, by dispatching a lunch of raw Bayonne ham and fresh figs, a hot sausage and crust, spindles of filleted pike and a rich rose-sauced mantua, a leg of lamb larded with anchovies, artichokes on a pedestal of foie gras, and four or five kinds of cheese, with a good bottle of Bordeaux and one of champagne, after which he would call for the Armagnac and remind Madame to have ready for dinner the larks and ortolans she had promised him, with a few langoustes and a turbot, and of course a stew made from the young wild boar that the lover of the leading lady in his current production had sent up from his estate in Salon.
And then what's funny to me is that surely he would have loved to have been at the really big lunch that novelist Jim Harrison wrote about not too long ago in The New Yorker, which was interesting to me because among the people who were there at that fabulous meal was Peter Lewis, the former owner of Seattle's Campagna restaurant. Here's what Harrison had to say. Is there an interior logic to overeating? Or does gluttony, like sex, wander around in a messy void, utterly resistant to our attempts to make sense of it? Not very deep within us, the hungry heart howls, supersize me. When I was a boy in northern Michigan, feeding my grandfather's pigs, I was amazed at their capacity. Before I was caught in the act and chided by my elders, I had empirically determined that the appetite of pigs was limitless. As I dawdled in the backyard, the animals gazed at me as fondly as many of us do at great chefs. Life is brutishly short, and we wish to eat well, and for this we must generally travel to large cities, or better yet, to France. On the other hand, you don't have to go to France to have a 37-course lunch to be writing about something fabulous. John T. Edge, known by all who know him, and I'm one, as John T., wrote this fabulous piece called Eating Space. It appeared in the Oxford American, and here's what he said. I once ate dinner at Lusco's, an elegantly shabby, depression vintage restaurant in the Mississippi Delta town of Greenwood, with my pants down. Two companions, both men, were similarly disrobed. I recall one filleting a pompano while his khakis pooled on the floor. The other, after cutting into a T-bone, cursed the sauce that splattered his boxers. Our lone female compatriot was demure. Her skirt remained on, but she wriggled out of her black brassiere, extracted it through the armhole of her blouse, and left it dangling on a lamp. I mean, you know, you gotta love that.
Oh, yes, indeed. Thanks for sharing, Nancy.
You're welcome, Stein.
Seattle Times food writer Nancy Leeson's blog, All You Can Eat, appears at seattletimes.com/allyoucaneat. I'm Dick Stein.